Okay, so let's unpack this. I want you to imagine that you're running a massive, heavily booked restaurant on like a Friday night.
Oh man, sounds stressful already.
Right. And in this restaurant, your waiters, they don't just walk up to a table and take an order. They literally have to run back into the kitchen, find the raw ingredients in the walk-in fridge, chop the vegetables themselves, cook the entire meal from scratch, plate it, and then carry it back out to their specific table
For every single order.
for every single order. So they're bumping into each other, fighting over the stove, dropping plates. I mean, it would just be pure chaos.
Yeah, the kitchen would grind to a halt within, what, 10 minutes? You'd have exhausted staff and furious customers because there is, zero division of labor there.
Exactly. And yet, when we look at how a lot of software gets tested, especially when teams are first kind of dipping their toes into test automation, that is the exact restaurant they're building.
It really is.
So, whether you are actively trying to scale an enterprise automation framework right now, or you're just insanely curious about how good, reliable software is actually built behind the scenes, today's deep dive is for you.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one.
We are looking at a comprehensive guide from Playwright Masters on something called the Page Object Model, or POM for short. And Playwright, if you aren't familiar, is this massively popular framework for end-to-end testing.
Right. It basically acts like a robot user clicking through your website to make sure everything works before you ship it to real customers.
Yeah, and today we're decoding how to structure those robot interactions so they don't become an absolute maintenance nightmare when an application inevitably changes, because they always change.
They do. And what's fascinating here is the illusion of simplicity that traps so many developers early on.
What do you mean by that?
Well, when you first start writing Playwright tests, putting every single locator, like the specific instructions for how the browser finds a button or a text box, putting all of that directly inside one single test file seems brilliant.
Because it's easy, right?
Right. It's fast to write. The test passes, you get your little green check mark. But by hard coding all those physical instructions into the test itself, you're basically planting a ticking time bomb for your future self.
Because an application is never finished. I mean, it breathes, it grows, it gets redesigned all the time.
Exactly.
So before we even look at the solution, I think we have to really feel the pain of the problem. The guide paints this picture perfectly, and I want to put ourselves in those shoes for a second.
Let's do it.
Let's say you have a small project. You write a script with three simple tests. The instructions read, find the username box, type the name, find the password box, type the password, click login.
Three tests, no big deal.
Right. But let's scale that up. Imagine a real-world enterprise software project. You don't have three test cases, you have like 500.
Oh, yeah. And suddenly, that exact same login sequence is a prerequisite for almost all of them.
Oh.
So your specific login locator appears in 100 different tests.
Wow, yeah.
Your site's main search box is hard-coded into 50 tests. The shopping cart checkout button is in 30.
And then the inevitable happens. The marketing team decides, the login button needs to be moved.
Always the marketing team.
Right. And so the developers update the application's underlying code, and suddenly the locator that Playwright uses to find that button changes.
And everything breaks.
Everything breaks. If I'm thinking about this right, having those instructions hard-coded everywhere is like having 100 different sets of physical keys for one single door.
That is a great way to look at it.
And if management decides to change the lock on that door, you now have to run around and physically cut 100 brand new keys just to let everyone back inside.
Which is just awful.
So what does this actually look like for the person writing the code? I
Yeah.
mean, are they just spending their Friday afternoons doing massive find and replace operations across their entire code base?
I mean, honestly, that becomes their entire job. It is the definition of a maintenance nightmare. You end up spending way more time fixing your automated tests than actually testing the software itself. So the return on investment for your automation just completely plummets.
And this is where the page object model comes in, right? It fundamentally changes that architecture.
Yes, exactly. The core philosophy of POM is a strict, disciplined separation of concerns. You are separating the test's intent from the UI's implementation.
Okay, test intent versus UI implementation. Let's draw a hard line there. Can you explain that boundary?
Sure. Think about the goal versus the mechanics. Like, test intent is what the user's trying to achieve on a human level.
Like the user logs in successfully.
Right. Or the user adds a gaming laptop to their cart. That represents the business logic of your application. The UI implementation, on the other hand, is the technical mechanics of how the browser accomplishes that goal.
So the actual code parts.
Yeah, exactly. The implementation is find the input field with the HTML label username, fill it with this specific string of text, locate the button with the role of submit, and trigger a mouse click event.
Ah, okay. Tying that back to our chaotic restaurant from earlier, the intent is simply, you know, table 4 gets a cheeseburger.
Yep.
The implementation is grill the meat for 4 minutes at 400 degrees, toast the brioche bun, add 1 ounce of ketchup.
That's perfect, yeah.
So the waiter, which is our test script, just needs to know the intent. The kitchen handles all the messy implementation.
Exactly. The waiter should never be chopping onions. So since managing 100 different sets of keys is absurd, we basically create a master key.
Okay, a master key. How does that work in the code?
Well, in the page object model, an application page, like your login page, is represented by a dedicated class in your code.
Okay.
This single file acts as the ultimate source of truth for that specific screen. It contains the playwright page object, it holds all those specific locators, and it wraps the page actions in reusable methods.
Okay, let me pause you there and push back a little bit.
Sure.
Because if I have a massive application with, say, 200 different screens, does this mean I literally have to create 200 different page object files in my project?
Yes, it usually does.
But doesn't that just take the spaghetti code from my test files and move it into a massively bloated folder directory? Like, how is having hundreds of files actually better?
It's a fair question. The difference really lies in mental overhead and centralization. Like, yes, you will have more files, but each file has a single, strictly defined responsibility.
So it's organized.
Exactly. If the login screen breaks, you know exactly which file to open. You aren't hunting through a massive test suite to find the problem.
Right. That makes sense.
And inside that login page class, you might write an asynchronous method just called login, which takes a username and password as arguments.
Okay.
From that point on, your actual test script doesn't know anything about CSS selectors or HTML labels or browser clicks. The test script just calls the login method and passes in the credentials.
Man, that totally transforms how the code reads on the screen.
It really does.
Instead of reading like a robotic instruction manual, something super dense and technical, it reads almost like plain English. You're just telling a human story of what the user does step by step.
Right. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this centralized, human-readable architecture is exactly why Playwright officially recommends the page object model for structuring large test suites.
It's just so much cleaner.
Oh, totally. Mm-hmm. Going back to your 100 keys problem, if the developers change the login button, you don't even open your 100 test files anymore.
You just go to the master key.
Exactly. You open your one login page class, you update the locator in that one specific spot, and instantly all 100 tests inherit that fix because they're all referencing that same class.
So it acts like a central switchboard. Ugh. You rewire one plug and the entire building lights up again.
Yeah, beautifully put.
But here's where my brain goes next with this. Real applications aren't just giant static monolithic pages.
No, not at all.
Like if I'm shopping on Amazon, I have a search bar at the very top of the screen. And that search bar is there if I'm on the homepage, it's there if I'm looking at a product, and it's there when I'm checking out.
Yep, it's everywhere.
And I definitely don't want to copy and paste the search bar instructions into my home page file and my product page file and my checkout page file. I feel like that defeats the entire purpose of centralizing things, right?
You've hit on a crucial evolution of the pattern. The source material emphasizes that treating everything as a full monolithic page is actually a huge rookie mistake.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Modern web applications are built using reusable components. Think about, you know, navigation headers, search boxes, pop-up modals, date pickers, or footers.
Right, stuff that shows up on almost every screen.
Exactly. If you duplicate the code for those components across multiple page objects, you are just recreating the spaghetti code problem at a slightly higher level of abstraction.
So here's where it gets really interesting for anyone who likes to build things. This sounds exactly like playing with Lego blocks.
Oh, I like that. How so?
Well, you don't build a brand new custom search box from scratch every time you build a new Lego house. You build a search box Lego piece once, you set it aside on your table, and then you just snap it onto the homepage or snap it onto the product page wherever the application calls for it.
The Lego analogy captures the mechanics perfectly.
Mm.
And to manage all these individual blocks, the guide recommends a very specific folder structure to prevent your directory from turning into basically a junk drawer.
Gotta keep the Lego sorted.
Exactly. You divide your project deliberately. You have a folder specifically for your full page objects. You have a separate folder for those reusable UI components, your Lego blocks.
Okay, makes sense.
Then you have your folder for the actual test scenarios. And finally, directories for test setup and generic helper functions.
It's like having a perfectly organized workbench in a garage. Every single tool has its outlined shadow on the pegboard.
Yes, and organization at that level prevents one of the most common catastrophic mistakes people make when trying to implement POM.
What's the mistake?
They will create a single file called application page, and they will just dump every single locator for the entire website into it.
Oh, no.
Yeah. If your class is 3,000 lines long, you haven't solved the maintenance problem. You've just concentrated the chaos into a single, unreadable document. Structure should make the project intuitive to navigate, not just look complex for the sake of complexity.
Right, absolutely. So let's play devil's advocate for a second, because even with a perfectly organized workbench, you can still build a structurally unsound house if you use the tools wrong.
Oh, definitely.
Let's talk about where people mess this up, specifically regarding assertions. Assertions are the part of the code that actually verifies if something worked right.
Right, the verification step.
Like check that the welcome message is visible on the screen. If the whole point of this model is hiding all the messy implementation details, why shouldn't I hide those verification steps inside the page object too?
It's the tempting thought.
Right. If my test just says login and the page object handles checking for the welcome message behind the scenes, my test file becomes literally a single line of code. That sounds incredibly clean to me.
So while it might be wildly tempting to hide assertions in the page object just to make your test files look beautifully short, it is actually a massive trap.
Really? A trap?
Yeah. The guide addresses this debate directly. A short test is not automatically a good test or a flexible one. The recommendation is to keep most business assertions in the test files themselves, while the page objects just expose actions or read the state of the page.
Okay, walk me through the danger there. Why is it a trap to have the page object do the checking?
It goes back to that vital boundary line between intent and implementation we talked about.
Okay.
Tests answer the question, what are we verifying today? The page object answers, how do we interact with this screen? If your page object starts handling the assertions, it is no longer just a neutral, generic map of the UI.
It becomes opinionated.
Exactly. It transforms into a rigid, opinionated test case itself.
Oh, I see the ripple effect there. If the login method inside my page object automatically asserts that a green success message appears.
Yes.
What happens when the QA team asks me to write a test verifying a failed login attempt?
There you go.
If I use that same page object, it's going to instantly fail the test because the object is hard-coded to expect success. I'd be fighting my own framework.
Exactly. You've completely ruined the reusability of the page object. The login page class should just log you in and maybe return whatever text happens to be on the screen, like an error message.
Ah, and then the test file is the judge.
Exactly. The test decides whether that specific error message is a pass or a fail for that specific scenario.
Yeah.
You have to keep the page object as a neutral messenger.
The page object just reports what it sees. I love that.
Yeah.
What are some other ways people shoot themselves in the foot when building out this structure?
Locators are a major stumbling block. A page object is ultimately only as stable as the locators inside it. The guide heavily emphasizes preferring stable, user-facing locators.
What does that mean in practice?
Well, Playwright has built-in methods designed to mimic how a real human user identifies elements on a screen.
Okay, I know reading raw code on a deep dive can be brutal for the listener, so give me a conceptual example of a bad locator versus a good one.
Sure. So a bad locator usually happens when someone right-clicks a button on a web page, opens the developer tools, and just hits copy selector.
Oh, I've definitely done that.
Right. We all have. But they end up pasting a fragile string of code into their project that basically says, find the seventh divider on the page, then look inside the span, then look inside the unordered list, and grab the third item.
Yikes. That sounds super brittle.
It is. Because if a developer adds a single new marketing banner to the top of the page, all those rigid structural directions are instantly broken, even if the button looks exactly the same to the user.
Because the button got pushed down one level, so it's no longer the seventh divider, the robot just goes blind.
Exactly, the robot goes blind. To fix this, Playwright offers semantic locators. Instead of giving those rigid directions, you just tell the framework to find the button named submit.
Oh, wow. That's so much simpler.
It's game-changing. It doesn't matter if the developers move that button to the top, the bottom, or inside a new menu entirely. Playwright scans the page the way a human would, finds a button with that name, and clicks it. It's incredibly resilient to visual redesigns.
That makes so much sense. You want the robot to look for the object, not memorize the exact coordinates of the object.
Precisely.
Are there other pitfalls in the guide?
Another major warning from the source material is the use of hard weights.
Hard weights?
Yeah, this happens when tests are running faster than the web application can load. So an element isn't ready, the test fails, and out of frustration, the engineer tells the code to just blindly pause for 5 seconds before trying to click.
Just literally putting the robot to sleep.
Yes. I love how the source material frames this. They state it perfectly. A 5-second sleep does not make a test intelligent.
That's great.
It really is. It just makes your entire test suite unnecessarily slow. And worse, it's still prone to random failures if the server happens to take 6 seconds to load that day.
So what's the alternative?
The best practice is relying on Playwright's built-in intelligent waiting.
Yeah.
It constantly polls the system and waits exactly as long as needed for an element to become ready, and not a single millisecond longer.
A 5-second sleep does not make a test intelligent. I am definitely writing that one down for my next meeting.
You should.
Okay, so we've got our Lego blocks neatly organized in folders. We are using smart human-like locators, and we are keeping our assertions strictly in the test files.
I'm solid.
But I have a logistical question about actually running this.
Lay it on me.
If I have a massive test suite with 50 different tests, do I really have to type out the setup code to pull my login page tool out of the toolbox at the top of every single one of those 50 files? That sounds like a mountain of tedious boilerplate code just to get started.
Yeah, if you did that, you'd just be trading one maintenance nightmare for another. You'd have hundreds of lines of identical setup code cluttering your project.
Right.
That is where mature teams bring in a completely different tool to handle delivery, which is Playwright fixtures.
Fixtures. Break that down for me.
Think of fixtures as an incredibly efficient dependency delivery system. They provide reusable test setup and what software engineers call dependency injection.
Okay, wait, dependency injection.
Yeah, people often mistakenly think the page object model and fixtures are competing ideas, but they actually solve two completely different problems. POM organizes your page interactions. Fixtures organize how those page objects are delivered to your tests.
Let's pause on dependency injection for a second, just to make sure we are all on the same page.
Sure.
Is that just a fancy way of saying the framework hands the test the exact tools it needs right when it needs them?
Pretty much, yeah.
Like, almost like a caddy in golf. You don't carry your own heavy bag of clubs around the course. The caddy just hands you the putter the exact second you step onto the green.
That is a brilliant way to conceptualize it. And the beauty is, you only define the caddy's job once in a central file.
Oh, nice.
You teach the fixture how to build a login page object. Then, in your actual test file, you just ask for the login page as an argument. The framework automatically initializes it in the background and hands it over to you.
That is so clean.
It completely strips out all that repetitive setup boilerplate. And utilizing fixtures ties seamlessly into another massive optimization the guide covers, which is authentication.
Oh, authentication is a massive bottleneck, because if I have a suite of 200 tests that require the user to be logged into an account, I do not want my automation literally typing in the username, typing the password, clicking submit, and waiting for the dashboard to load 200 separate times.
No, absolutely not.
The test suite would take hours to finish.
The guide explicitly warns against that. Do not force the UI to log in before every single test. Instead, they recommend utilizing Playwright's storage state feature.
How does that actually work under the hood? Like, why is it faster?
To understand why it's faster, you kind of have to understand how modern web servers actually track users.
Okay.
When you log into a website, the server verifies your password and then gives your browser a stamped digital ticket, usually a session cookie or a token.
Right.
From that moment on, the server doesn't care about your password anymore. It just looks to see if you have that ticket in your pocket.
I see where this is going.
What storage state does is run a single setup script that logs in through the UI once, captures that digital ticket, and saves it to a file.
So it bypasses the login screen entirely for the rest of the tests.
Exactly. Before the rest of your 200 tests even open a browser window, Playwright injects that save ticket into the browser storage. When the test navigates to the dashboard, the web server sees the ticket and assumes you are already fully authenticated.
Okay, analogy time. Doing the physical UI login every single test is like going to a massive, sprawling music festival.
Okay, I'm with you.
Every time you want to walk into a different music tent or visit a different stage, you have to walk all the way back outside to the main festival gate, wait in the massive security line, show your ID, get your bag checked, and walk all the way back in.
That would be horrible.
Right. But saving the authentication state with storage state is like getting a VIP wristband.
Yes.
You verify your ID exactly once at the main gate at the start of the day. From then on, you just flash the wristband, bypass the line, and instantly access whatever part of the application you want to test.
The VIP wristband perfectly illustrates the technical mechanism there. And this distinction is vital because it addresses a very common misconception the guide highlights.
Well, what's the misconception?
People constantly ask, does implementing the page object model make my tests run faster?
Honestly, my gut reaction would be yes, because the code is structured so much cleaner.
A lot of people think that, but the reality is no. The page object model itself does not make browser execution run any faster.
Really?
Yeah, POM is purely an architectural pattern for code organization, human readability, and long-term maintenance. The actual performance speedups, the strategies that take a test suite from a 30-minute runtime down to a 3-minute runtime, those come from techniques like auth state reuse, exactly like your VIP wristband, and running tests in parallel across multiple machines.
Oh, wow.
You use POM to keep the code sane, and you use advanced framework features for the speed.
That is a really crucial distinction to make. POM is for the humans reading the code. State reuse is for the machines executing it.
Exactly.
And when you look at a test written with all of these practices combined, I mean, it is genuinely a thing of beauty. The guide provides an example of a full e-commerce checkout workflow.
Oh, yeah. It's so elegant.
With fixtures handling the setup and POM abstracting the UI, the test code simply reads login page.login, product page.search product, product page.add product to cart, checkout page.complete order.
It reads like a narrative. It completely abstracts away the messy, chaotic reality of the underlying HTML and CSS. It basically describes the perfect, frictionless user journey.
And that brings it all back to you, the listener. Whether you are actively staring down a massive e-commerce automation suite at work right now, or you're simply trying to understand the principles of how complex software systems are maintained over time without collapsing under their own weight, the core lesson of the page object model applies everywhere.
It really does.
Setting clear boundaries, separating what you want to achieve from how you technically achieve it, creating modular, reusable building blocks instead of constantly repeating yourself. I mean, these are the fundamental keys to building any system that scales.
And, you know, if we look toward the future of technology, this structural discipline leaves us with something quite profound to think about.
Ooh, I love a good profound thought. Let's hear it.
We just spent all this time discussing how the page object model trains us to perfectly mimic user journeys in our code, right? Abstracting away all those fragile UI layers so that tests read like plain English sentences.
Right. User logs in, user buys a laptop.
Exactly. Well, as artificial intelligence models become increasingly integrated into testing frameworks, it raises a fascinating possibility.
Okay, where is this going?
If our test intent is already abstracted in these clean, human-readable sentences, how long before future AI simply reads our plain text intent and dynamically generates, executes, and even auto-heals the underlying browser locators on the fly as the UI changes?
Whoa.
By writing such perfectly structured, human-readable code today, are we essentially training the AI models that will make manual POM maintenance completely obsolete tomorrow?
Wow. We are meticulously organizing the perfect kitchen structure just to eventually hand the keys to the entire restaurant over to AI chefs.
Pretty much.
That is wild to think about. The better we get at explaining our intent, the easier it is for the machines to take over the implementation.
It's a fun paradox to leave everyone with.
Next time you look at a piece of automation code, or really any technical system, ask yourself, is this a robotic instruction manual? Or is this a story an AI could easily read?
I love that.
That is all for today's deep dive into the page object model. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.